You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Well, we're out here on location in the MC3 parking lot in front of what is officially known as Shed Number 3. Now, this shed is something that, you know, has been here since we got our building. However, the building and grounds team and the First Impressions parking lot team, they would love for us to be able to get rid of this so that we have some more room to park. And so I thought, you know, hey, we're in quarantine. I've got nothing else to do. Why don't I see if I can help them bring down the shed and then give some more room for parking. So I'm going to try a few different things to do that, and I'll go get the first one. I'll be right back. First thing, a bike horn. Next try, a shell horn. Didn't work, we're going to try a brass horn, trumpet. Oh, I know what's wrong. Okay, maybe it's an issue of authenticity. We're going to use an actual bull horn, a horn from a bull. Okay, maybe we need to come at this from a different direction. How about the Matterhorn, Swiss Alps? Try that. Maybe we need to try something different. We'll use a truck horn. I didn't seem to do it. I don't understand why. I mean, well, maybe it's because it doesn't make any sense to use a horn to try to bring down a building. So, Jeremy, David, I'm really sorry. I guess we'll have to get to it some other time with, you know, maybe tools or something. So why don't we go into the garage and talk about why in the world I was trying to do this.
Welcome back into the garage. We made it here safely, and I quickly, you know, in the long journey from there, I arranged all these things for you to see as a reminder of what we just did. But the real question is, what did we just do? Why? Who in their right mind would think, wow, let's tear down a building by, you know, blowing horns at it? Nobody would do that. You know, maybe if I took the truck and instead of using the horn, just use the truck itself to drive through, that would probably work. My trumpet has already been dropped back in my marching band days, and so it does not do well even with soft ground, so it probably could not take down that building. So none of those things would take down the building by just making sound. So why would anybody try to do that? And of course, if you know anything about the story that we're looking at today, you probably know where we're going. But we're going to be looking at this story from Joshua. And this idea that where God, not an idea, but an account where God instructs the Israelites to bring down the walls of Jericho using horns and shouting. And we'll come to that in a second. But just to catch you up here on this series, this is the last week of the Unexpected series. And throughout this series, we've been looking at how God has asked His followers to do different things that are very unexpected. The first week, we talked about how they had to step into the Jordan River at flood stage, a dangerous thing. And then once they did, God stopped the waters and they were able to walk through on dry land. The second way, we looked at this idea of someone's wounds bringing healing, someone's death bringing life, and how Jesus' death brought life, and how that doesn't make sense with us, but because of that unexpected thing, we have hope for eternity. And then last week, we looked at this idea of putting the nets on the right side of the boat, and how sometimes we do things, and even in that story, God's followers, Jesus' followers, were told to after they've been fishing all night, to put their nets on the other side of the boat, and they would catch something. And every one of those situations, and the one we're going to be looking at today, had an act of obedience, an act of faith that the people had to do that didn't make sense. It didn't fit. It was unsafe. It seemed like they've already tried it before, and some of those themes we've looked at throughout this month. But when they did, God showed up. And so the point that I want to look at today, kind of bringing a lot of this together, is this. That sometimes we have to take unexpected steps even when it doesn't make sense. So we're going to be looking at this passage in Joshua. And before we get there, before we go to it, just as a reminder, actually, the first week of the series, we were talking about the Israelites crossing the Jordan River, getting ready to go into the Promised Land, to go into the land that they had conquered. And of course, during the story series, the series called The Story, last month we talked about how there were 40 years of wandering in the desert because of disobedience, and Moses was the leader, and he dies off, and Joshua is now the new leader, getting ready to take them into the land that God had promised over 400 years ago, or well before that, to Abraham, their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, and how that Abraham was the father of this huge nation now known as the nation of Israel. And so they've crossed the Jordan River, and it's time to conquer this land. And they've got an army. They've been working for 40 years, training in the desert. Some different things happen. You can read about that in the book of Numbers. But they're finally getting ready to take their first city, and it's the city of Jericho. And so it's time to go in to finally to get this land that God had promised them. And as you'll see, it didn't quite go the way they expected. So the first thing is, as we look at this idea, a lot of times these unexpected steps, these steps of faith, they don't make sense, and they look like nonsense. And so I want to talk about this nonsense and how faith can just kind of look weird. Faith can just be this, this doesn't make any sense. And so that's what we're going to see here in this passage. In Joshua chapter 6 is where we're going to be. But the first thing I want you to see is that faith can look like stupidity. Now, it can look like stupidity. Don't get me wrong here. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying faith is stupidity, but it can look like it. And it's just this idea of sometimes the plan doesn't make sense. It doesn't look like it should. So let's look at that here in Joshua chapter 6. Beginning in verse 6, it says, "So Joshua called together the priests and said, 'Take up the ark of the Lord's covenant and assign 7 priests to walk in front of it, each carrying a ram's horn.'" Horn. "Then he gave orders to the people, 'March around the town, and the armed men will lead the way in front of the ark of the Lord.' After Joshua spoke to the people, the 7 priests with ram's horns started marching in the presence of the Lord, blowing the horns as they marched, and the ark of the Lord's covenant followed behind them. Some of the armed men marched in front of the priests with the horns, and some behind the ark with the priests continually blowing the horns. 'Do not shout. Do not even talk,' Joshua commanded. 'Not a single word from any of you until I tell you to shout. Then shout.' So the ark of the Lord was carried around the town once that day. And then everyone returned to spend the night in the camp." So So as you're looking at this story, again, thinking in terms of the Israelites, thinking in terms of you've got an army and they're divided basically in half. The priests are in the middle with the Ark of the Covenant, with the horns, the ram's horns, and they're blowing these horns. And the army is marching around this city called Jericho. And just to give you a little bit of a background, first of all, the city of Jericho, they think it was probably around 8 to 9 acres. So in order to march around the walls of Jericho, it probably took 30 minutes. It wasn't a super long, complicated thing. They would have to walk around the city. And the instructions that they were given, the instructions that Joshua gave to the people was, we want you to walk around the city. We're going to blow the horns, but don't make a sound. And so until I say to shout. And so for the Israelites, this was kind of like, okay, we're going to kind of sneak up. Like, we're getting ready to take over this land. We're getting ready to take over this town and take over this city here. And then the crazy thing about it was that at the end of this lap, this loop around the city, I'm sure they were all ready to raise they would give the signal and it would be time to charge, take the city, take the walls, bring it down. And they just walked around in silence and then just went back to their camp. And that was what the end of verse 11 said. So they just returned to their camp. And I would be willing to bet that the soldiers, these guys that have been training and been ready and even from their parents' generation hearing about this land that God was going to provide for them, were like, yeah, it's time to take it. And they spent the day, 30-minute jog around the city and then went back to camp. And I think, again, without being too tainted by VeggieTales, I think there probably was this idea with an army. It wasn't like just random people. It was the army that was going around the walls to just walk around and then just go back to camp that night seemed like a really stupid plan. It didn't look like it. Why would you, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? Why would we walk around the city? We've been training. We're ready. It's been 40 years. We're finally here. We crossed the Jordan in a miraculous way. Why in the world would we just walk around in silence for the most part and then just go back to camp? Like that just seems illogical. It seems stupid. And just sometimes we need to remember that faith can look like stupidity. Sometimes the plan looks stupid. It might not look logical. And we'll see that we'll be able to continue that idea. Another thing to be aware of when it comes to the city of Jericho, as they're walking around these walls, based on some of the walls of the era that archaeologists have discovered, the way a city wall was built was that it would be up to about maybe even up to 50 feet of earth for the foundation. So they have a 50-foot basically earth berm, and they would actually dig down to bedrock so that no one could tunnel under the wall. And so this would be 50 feet high. Then on top of that 50 feet of dirt, they would build somewhere between 10 to 25 feet wide. They would build up to about 30 feet higher of brick. So we've got 50 feet of dirt, about 30 feet of brick, and again, 10 to 25 feet wide is this wall. So it is a substantial-sized wall. That's 80 feet from ground to the top, 80 feet of wall that they had, which, if you were here in the garage with me, that's essentially, and if you've been here before, that's essentially four of these garages, four of the MC3 buildings stacked on top of each other. It's a formidable structure. And so the army is ready. It's time to go. I'm sure they're thinking, okay, how are we going to take down that tower? How are we going to burn down this area? How are we going to get through the gates? But instead, they walked in silence and then went back to bed, essentially. And I don't know, we weren't there. The Bible doesn't record what the people said. But I'm sure there was this, like, that looks really stupid. And even for us to look at, like, that's not a very good plan. Now, maybe you know the story. Maybe you know what happens here at the end of this passage. But if you don't, or even if you were just looking at this from a military strategy, like, that doesn't make any sense. And frankly, you're making yourself vulnerable because there's, 80 feet above you, people can be dumping things. They can throw rocks. They can hit you with arrows, spears, whatever. So you're even vulnerable, which doesn't make sense either. Only to walk around for 30 minutes. And so sometimes faith can look like stupidity. It doesn't make sense. It's nonsense. And that's where the Israelite people were in this moment. But the second thing is that sometimes faith can seem like monotony. Faith can seem like monotony. It sometimes, and we talked a little bit about this last week, or not a little bit, we spent our last week talking about this idea of sometimes doing things over and over, and then what's the point? I don't see any difference. It's not making any difference. And you can go to mc3church.org/unexpected and listen to that. You can listen to last week, which I don't remember the title off the top of my head, but it was April 19th was the date. So you can listen to that. But this idea of monotony and of what's the point, and we're doing it over and over. And so that's how the passage continues in verse 12. It says, "Then Joshua got up early the next morning, and the priests again carried the ark of the Lord. The seven priests with the ram's horns marched in front of the ark of the Lord, blowing their horns. Again, the armed men marched both in front of the priests with the horns and behind the ark of the Lord. All this time, the priests were blowing their horns. So on the second day, they again marched around the town once and returned to camp. They followed this pattern for 6 days." So this idea of monotony, not only does the first day seem kind of stupid, seem like this isn't a very good idea, this is a bit dangerous, this certainly isn't how, you know, a good military leader would bring down a giant city, would bring down the walls of a city or take over a city. And so not just one day are they walking around 30 minutes in silence. They did it for 6 days. And I don't know what the Israelite people were thinking. Again, it's not recorded there, but you got to wonder, if you were this army ready to go, this army and these people excited about finally getting to get to take the land that God had promised all those years ago, and then to be like, wait, we're doing this again? And then the next morning, wait, we're doing it again? And then maybe they're like, by the third or fourth day, they're like, okay, this will be the day. And they go around 30 minutes, and then they're back at camp. Like, what is going on here? What's the deal? Who is this Joshua anyway? Why are we even following him? Like, what kind of leader is this? This is not a very good military leader. This is nonsense. Why would we keep doing the same thing over and over? Hey, Josh, it's not working. And I think that idea of looking at faith, sometimes it can seem like monotony. It can seem like we're doing something over and over and we're not getting any results. We're seeing nothing happening. We're even wondering, what's the point? Why is this necessary? As we talked about last week, what's the use? I've been fishing all night. Why would it make sense to put my net on the other side of the boat? And the third thing that we see here when it comes to this idea of nonsense, of it not making any sense, is that faith can feel like absurdity. And I don't know if people use the word absurd anymore. Kendra's got me watching British TV shows, and so they say absurd a lot. Absurd. That's absurd. So maybe faith can feel absurd. It feels like absurdity. That's a hard word to say. So we'll just say it feels absurd. But the point is, it feels like foolishness. It feels so silly. It feels like, what? I'm looking like an idiot now. Yes, thank you. That's how faith can feel. And that's what we see as the passage continues. So on the seventh day, in verse 15, on the seventh day, the Israelites got up at dawn and marched around the town as they had done before. But this time they went around the town 7 times. The seventh time around, as the priests sounded the long blast on their horns, Joshua commanded the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the town. Jericho and everything in it must be completely destroyed as an offering to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and the others in her house will be spared, for she protected our spies. Do not take any of the things set apart for destruction, or you yourselves will be completely destroyed, and you will bring trouble on the camp of Israel. Everything made from silver, gold, bronze, or iron is sacred to the Lord and must be brought into his treasury." And so here we are. Now it's the seventh day. Whoa. Not just once, not just twice. Hey, this is different. With 3 times, 4 times, okay, we're getting somewhere. And on the 7th time, Joshua has them play the ram's horn one loud blast, and he yells, "Now, shout, do it!" And at the same time, he didn't say, okay, get out your guns. Your guns, they didn't have guns. Get out your swords. Get ready. He didn't say, you know, let's bring the tank up. It was just shout. And you got to wonder how the people were like, really? So we're just going to yell at the wall now? Josh, the wall's 80 feet tall. It's not going to work. It's really, you know, there's no way to bring that down. And Josh, I'm just, you know, imagining maybe in the future some guy will try to bring down a shed, you know, using a trumpet and a shell and a picture of a mountain. And it doesn't make sense. And Josh, I know we've been doing this, and this is the day 7. We got to walk around 7 times now. But really, the plan is to yell. I don't know if I want to look like an idiot. I think I'll pass on this one, because I'm sure by this point the the people of Jericho were probably looking and going, okay, here they are again. Oh, now they're going to yell at us. Good, that's really going to do something. And sometimes faith can feel like that. It can feel absurd. It can feel foolish. It can feel just like, okay, now I'm an idiot. And sometimes maybe even for stepping out in faith, we can be mocked. People will make fun of us. People will look at you weird. And again, maybe it isn't even what they're doing, but just you going, okay, I'm going to yell now, and that's going to bring the wall down. And so all of these have this idea of nonsense. Faith can look like stupidity. It can seem like monotony. It can feel like absurdity. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing this, Josh? What is the point? And so that's the question I have for you. If faith really does look that stupid, monotonous, and absurd, why did Joshua do it? Why did Joshua lead the people to do it? Why? And that's a good question. Like, what would bring this guy here? He's clearly leading the people to walk in silence each of these days, to walk 7 times on the last day, and then to shout. So if it looks that stupid and looks that absurd and makes him and the people look like idiots, why did Joshua do something like this? To find out the answer, let's rewind. So sometimes we have to take unexpected steps, even when it doesn't make sense. So this idea of Joshua and the people going to take over the land of Jericho, the city of Jericho, it might not make sense, but the difference is that Joshua had the presence of God. It wasn't nonsense. It was presence. And so if we look at Joshua chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, going into chapter 6, it says, when Joshua was near the town of Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a sword in hand. Joshua went up to him and demanded, are you friend or foe? Neither one, he replied. I am the commander of the Lord's army. At this, Joshua fell with his face to the ground in reverence. I am at your command, Joshua said. What do you want your servant to do? The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did as he was told. Now the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites. No one was allowed to go out or in. But the Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho, its king, and all its strong warriors. You and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. 7 priests will walk ahead of the ark, each carrying a ram's horn. On the 7th day, you are to march around the town 7 times with the priests blowing the horns. When you hear the priests give one long blast on the ram's horns, have all the people shout as loud as they can. then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight into the town. So here, Joshua has the presence of God. He interacts with this commander of the Lord's army. And the word there for commander isn't just like he's some random human, but it actually means this an important official. Some people even say that this might have been Jesus before he actually, you know, came in the flesh in the Gospels, when he was born, you know, to Mary and Joseph. But this was an amazing moment. This wasn't an angel. This was something beyond that. And so God's presence, God is there. And Joshua, before he just crossed over the Jordan River, before getting ready to go into Jericho, he's outside of this city and God shows up. And when he sees God, he says, "Who are you?" God says, "I'm the commander." This person says, "I'm the commander of the Lord's army," which is another name that is used in the Bible for God, for the Lord of hosts is what he's called, or Lord Almighty, the powerful one. And so Joshua recognizes this and he falls to the ground in worship. And then he says, "What should I do?" And notice that this commander of this army, now Joshua knows what it means to be a commander of an army, because he is one. But this commander says, doesn't give him a battle strategy, doesn't give him a plan of attack, doesn't tell him where to sharpen his weapons, doesn't tell him the best kind of horse to ride into battle. He says, "Take off your shoes, because you're in my presence, and this is holy ground." And God sets the stage here for what isn't going to be a military battle. This is a spiritual battle. This is a battle that says, God says, "I've got this. This is about me, not about your power, not about your strength, not about your people. This is about me, and I'm going to show up, and I'm going to do something incredible." And the word, it's a cool thing, the word that God uses here for the walls falling down, he says, the walls are going to fall down. Now remember, if you remember, the walls are, you know, possibly 80 feet tall. And he says, these walls are going to collapse. And it's the same word, the same Hebrew word for Joshua falling on his face before the Lord. And so there's this really cool concept of God, you know, Joshua falling in reverence and God saying, now those walls are going to fall also essentially in reverence to God, because Joshua had the presence of God. And so in the presence of God, things are different now. In the presence of God, it changes everything. Because in the presence of God, stupidity doesn't matter. Because God's ways are wiser. And so even though it might have looked stupid for them to walk around the wall that first day and just go right back to camp, it might have seemed dumb. It didn't matter to Joshua, because before that he had this encounter with God. He was in the presence of the holy living God. And when you're in the presence of God, when you're connected to God, when you realize who it is that's telling you to do what you do, stupidity doesn't matter anymore, because God's ways are wiser than the ways of everything else around us, than the ways of the world. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul says this, "Stop deceiving yourselves. If you think you are wise by this world's standards, you need to become a fool to be truly wise." He says, "For the wisdom of this world is foolishness to God. As the scriptures say, he traps the wise in the snare of their own cleverness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, and he knows that they are worthless." And so for Joshua, this wasn't a stupid decision, because God was the one that told him to do it. And even though the rest of the people around him, even though maybe even his own people, would look at that situation and look at him saying, "Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's not logical." Joshua didn't care, because God's ways are so much better. God's ways are so much wiser. And we consider, excuse me, you know, when we talk about the way people might look at something and say, "Well, that doesn't make sense. That's not the best way." And if we're stepping out in faith and people think it's stupid, but it's something that God has commanded us or told us to do in his word, God's ways are wiser. And the cool thing about 1 Corinthians 3 there is Paul says, you know, God even knows the thoughts of the wise people, the quote unquote wise people. And he knows them, and he said their thoughts are worthless. And so if we look at something that God is calling us to do, if you are looking at something that you know you're supposed to do, and people say, "Well, that's stupid. That's dumb. Why would you do that?" If God has told you to do it and you recognize who is calling you to do this, who is telling you to do this, stupidity doesn't matter. Because God's like, my ways are way better than them. I know more. I know everything. I know the beginning and the end. I know what we're going through right now. I know what you're going through right now. He knows all of it. And so we can't rely on some human and their wisdom, whether they're smart. And there's amazing people. And we're not saying that smartness is a bad thing. But we need to realize that sometimes if we're being called stupid for doing what God calls us to do, we're probably in a good spot. The second thing, and when it comes to Joshua and this idea of being in the presence of God, is that monotony doesn't matter because God's growth is greater. And again, looking at this idea we were talking about from last week, you know, if why am I doing this? What's the point? Why am I doing this? Because if nothing's happening, I'm not seeing results. And for Joshua, for the people, why are we walking around this city six different times? It doesn't matter. We're not getting anywhere. But to Joshua, he had a connection with God. He was in the presence of the holy God who said, you know, take your shoes off because this is holy ground. And so to Joshua, monotony doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we're doing this over and over because God's growth is greater. Because God is the one that causes things to happen. God is the one that causes growth to happen. And in 1 Corinthians 3, it's actually just a little bit earlier in the same chapter we were looking at. Paul writes this. He says, after all, who is Apollos? Who is Paul? We are only God's servants through whom you believe the good news. Each of us did the work the Lord gave us. I planted the seed in your hearts, and Apollos watered it, but it was God who made it grow. It's not important who does the planting or who does the watering. What's important is that God makes the seed grow. The one who plants and the one who waters work together with the same purpose, and both will be rewarded for their own hard work. And so here, this idea, Paul's like, you know, Paul's talking about himself, and Apollos was another Christian leader and a church leader. And people were like, oh, I like you better. And Paul's like, look, it's not about either of us. It's not about any of us. We do our job. And as Paul referenced there in verse 8, it's hard work. And sometimes we do hard work and it becomes monotonous in the sense that we have to keep doing it. But it doesn't matter because it's not up to us for the growth to take place. It's not our job to make it happen. It's not our responsibility to make the walls come down. It's not our responsibility to make it grow. And he's using an illustration that we know, like, you can water a plant, you can plant it, you can cultivate the soil, you can do everything, but you can't make it grow. That's God's job. And because you didn't make it grow, because you didn't make anything grow, we can't take credit for it. And that's where God gets the glory. And even in the situation, well, this whole series, frankly, is because these were so unexpected and required so much faith that when people stepped out, the people didn't get the glory. God got the glory because God is the one that makes things grow. And I also just want to say this to some of you. You know, sometimes we think it's our responsibility to make people grow, to make things grow, whatever that thing is. And you can't, which means it's not on your shoulders. And I think it's so often sometimes we get stuck in this idea of, if I don't do this, it's not going to happen. Calm down, slow down, and recognize that God's the one that's going to make it grow. And so maybe it is difficult. Maybe it's hard. Maybe it's repetitive. Maybe it doesn't happen right away. Maybe it doesn't happen for years. But understand that it's God's job to make it grow. And so our job is to obey. And for the Israelites to walk around that city six times, it wasn't a matter of whether they could cause that. They weren't shaking the foundations. They weren't slowly working in, like, you know, what do they call that thing? There's a name for it where the rhythm causes, and there's that bridge that went like, blah, blah, blah. And the lady could sing, oh, and it caused the glass to shatter. It'll come back to me. I'll get back to you on that. But they weren't doing that. They were just walking. Resonant frequency, that's what it's called. You can look that up in your physics books. But there wasn't anything happening physically. It was obedience. And because of that, it seemed monotonous, but when God showed up, it was an amazing thing. And so when we are connected to God, when we realize that God's holy living word, living and active word, is his instruction to us, and there's things in there like, well, that doesn't seem like it's going to be that much fun. It might seem a little bit boring, but if we realize wait, I'm doing this for God, and I'm just going to keep obeying, and then watch Him provide the growth. And so, for Joshua, he was in God's presence. He had this encounter with the Holy God. And so his stupidity didn't matter. God's ways are wiser. The monotony doesn't matter. God's growth is greater. And the third thing was that the absurdity. Hey, I said it right that time. The absurdity doesn't matter because God's standards are simple. Because see, I think sometimes we have this idea of, well, I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't want to look stupid. And not that God wants us to look stupid, but I think God wants us to be far less put together than we pretend that we are, if that makes sense. I think He knows that we're not put together. And when we realize that we're not that perfect, we're not that great, we're not that good, that we're willing to look like an idiot sometimes, then God says, yes, I know, and that's why you need me. But I think sometimes we get so caught up in, I need to look good, I don't want to be embarrassed, I don't want to look stupid, I don't want to be absurd. We miss the fact that God's standards are not like that. God doesn't want us to be all polished and put together. As a matter of fact, He kind of goes the other way. In Matthew chapter 18, listen to what happens here with Jesus. This is Jesus that we're talking about. He says, He, Jesus, called a little child to Him and placed the child among them. So there's a child right there. And Jesus said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And so you have this idea of Jesus saying to His disciples, He's bringing a child right there, and He says to them, like, can we stop being grown up for a second? You need to be like a child. You need to have that pure, raw, simple, basic faith like a child. So absurdity doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you look foolish. It doesn't matter because God's standards are just simple. And I think it's just such an interesting thing there that he brings a child. And again, people are like, oh, I'm not going to act like a child. I don't want to act immature or seem foolish. God, Jesus says, actually, maybe we should. Maybe you should do that. Because that simplistic, that there's no preconceived ideas, there's no built up expectations of who I'm supposed to be and who the world wants me to be and all that. He says, have faith like a child. Be like a child. And then you can enter the kingdom of heaven. It's very simple. God is more interested, I wrote this here, He's more interested in our childish obedience, than our grown up excuses for disobedience. Because I think we are so good at coming up with reasons of why we don't actually have to do the thing that we're supposed to do. Why we don't have to obey the words that God has given us in the Bible. Because, well, here's a technicality, here's a rule, here's a loophole. And Jesus says, be like a kid and just do it. Don't worry about how you're going to look. If people are like, oh, and that's what was going on. I mean, there was another passage shortly after that where people were saying, no, don't bring the kids to Jesus. Don't bother him with kids. And Jesus is like, bring it. Bring it. I want kids to be around me. I want that childlike faith. And how often we get stuck in this, like, I don't want to look like an idiot. But for Joshua, he didn't care. It didn't matter to him because he had encountered God. He had that moment, that holy moment. And so absurdity didn't matter because God's standards were simple. So you've got these three different things that at one point looked like, wow, faith is kind of dumb looking. But to Joshua, they weren't nonsense. They were connected to God's presence. And then when you're connected to God's presence, when you're in the presence of God, when you're obeying, when you're doing these things, even though it might seem stupid, it might feel monotonous, and it might look absurd, then in that moment, God shows up. And when God shows up, it changes everything. And for Joshua, he did these things. He led the people after this encounter with God. He led the people in these things for these 7 days. And it seemed like, well, okay, here we go. And for him, it didn't matter because he was following God's orders, God's commands, God's instructions. And then in Joshua chapter 6, verse 20, to the end of the story. So Joshua had just told the people to shout. He says, when the people heard the sound of the ram's horn, they shouted as loud as they could. So they obeyed. And suddenly the walls of Jericho collapsed, and the Israelites charged straight into the town and captured it. So these possibly 80-foot walls, 10 to 25 feet thick, collapsed from a shout and some trips around the wall, some 30-minute walks around the wall for 7 days. Because God showed up there. And now, of course, all these skeptics that were like, well, that seems stupid. This seems monotonous. I mean, certainly the people in Jericho were like, oh, dang. Okay, we're in trouble now. And God showed up and brought down the walls of the city. And because of their obedience. And I think that's where we need to come to grips with this whole idea of unexpected, this whole idea of doing things that don't make sense, because sometimes they don't make sense, but that's okay, because it's not about us. It's not about nonsense. It's about our connection with God's presence. So I want to close with this one thought. And this thought, I'm going to say it's not easy. It's not an easy thought to consider, and you might not like it. Frankly, I don't like it. But I want you to just consider this when it comes to this, not only just today with this idea of Joshua and obeying God and the walls coming down, but the entire series of these unexpected steps of faith and watching God show up. And that's this statement: if your life makes sense to the world, you may not be living it for Jesus. If your life makes sense to the world, you may not be living it for Jesus. Oh, we're having some technical problems there. There we go. If your life makes sense to the world, you may not be living it for Jesus. And if that almost sounds harsh, and I just want to challenge you, challenge me with that. Like, if everyone around us are going, oh, yeah, I get it. That makes perfect sense. Maybe you're not living for Jesus the way we're supposed to. Because our faith is going to look kind of absurd sometimes. And it's going to look a little bit monotonous sometimes. And it's going to look a little bit stupid. And it's going to seem unsafe, as we talked about the first week. And it's going to seem, you know, like, well, that doesn't even seem like the right way. Why would someone die? Like, it might not make sense in our brains or to other people. And it might be lastly, like, what's the use? But if your life makes sense to the world around you, if the people around you that aren't following Jesus, if the way you're living makes sense to them, you might not be living it for Jesus. And I'm not saying you are. I mean, it's not a perfect blanket statement, but I think it's something that we should consider, that if we don't look a little bit different, if we don't look a little bit unusual, maybe we're not actually obeying God the way we're supposed to. Maybe we're not actually living for Jesus the way we're supposed to. Maybe it's time to change that. Maybe you need to step out in faith in some area. You're going to step out and all of a sudden people around you are like, whoa, what are you doing that for? Don't rock the boat. Maybe do you need to ignore the critics and trust God? Maybe there's something that you know you need to do and everyone else is going like, no, that doesn't make sense. Don't do that. And so you're kind of like, okay, never mind. But maybe you need to ignore them and trust God, even if they mean well, even if they're close to you. Because let me tell you, I mean, Joshua, he had this encounter with the presence of God. And this moment, he was willing to do all of these kind of crazy, weird things in obedience. And how easy it is for us to go, like, yeah, that's something I'm going to do. But even if someone close to us is like, nah, you shouldn't do that, we're like, okay, never mind. And listen to me. You're allowing a human being to outweigh God. And that human being gets the priority. And I'm not saying you don't love them. I'm not saying you don't care about them. But maybe you need to step out in faith and just trust God, even if someone close to you is being a critic. Maybe you need to take a step of faith with your money. Maybe there's something financially that you need to do, whether it's maybe giving more to something. Maybe it's not trying to make as much. Even if others tell you that you can't afford it, Because there's going to be critics to that. Like, well, that doesn't make sense. Where's your 401k? What's your plan? What's your retirement plan? How are you going to provide for your family? What about your kids? Are you thinking about having any kids? Do you ever want to get out of this house? Don't you want to move on somewhere else? And all these things that are added onto it, that people are like, yeah, let me give you some good reasons why what you're trying to do in faith doesn't make sense. And if you're doing that and the people are saying it doesn't make sense, you might be on the right track. Maybe you need to step out in faith financially with your money. Do you need to stop worrying about what other people think about you? Maybe that's your issue. Maybe you know that it's pretty easy, clear what you need to do, and you don't really have a problem doing those things for Jesus. You just don't want other people to look at you differently. You don't want people to look down on you. You don't want people to look at you and maybe they won't be your friend now. And I'm not saying that in a mocking way. I know, like, we're insecure. I'm insecure. We worry about what people think so much. But if we allow those voices to crowd out what God has told us to do, not only are we disobeying Him, but we're missing out on something incredible. I mean, can you imagine the Israelites? Joshua, if the people were like, Joshua, this is a dumb plan. He's like, yeah, you're right, guys. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's all good. We'll just sit here. You know, I mean, one, they wouldn't have taken over the city. Or maybe he was like, okay, well, let's get our swords and we'll start, you know, hacking away at the wall there. They would have missed completely God's power. Maybe some other things. One of the things I've heard a lot over these last, obviously, few weeks in quarantine is how it's causing many of you and me and others, you know, to rethink what is normal. What is the way things are supposed to be? And I would encourage you, you know, right now there's a lot of weird things happening across our country, across our state. And yet at the same time, they're completely normal because everyone else across our country and across our state is doing those things. Get that? And so weird isn't really weird anymore. It's not unusual because now it's normal. It's sort of the idea of, you know, you wanting to be an outsider, a fringe person, just like everyone else, which then if you're a fringe person, you're not, and you're like everyone else, then you're not on the fringes. But anyway, just something to consider with even now. Like, are you finding that the time with your family is valuable? And when we go back to normal, maybe you don't go back to normal. Maybe you make some changes in your work schedule with this new normal. Maybe you make some sacrifices with your time to spend more time with your family. Or maybe you make some sacrifices you can spend more time with God or just some time with God. Maybe you make some changes to your work schedule. The point is this, or just this idea, that's not the point, but the idea is that if your life makes sense to the world, you may not be living it for Jesus. And so I think we need to take a hard look. And the people, are people coming to you and looking at you, and again, maybe they probably mean well, saying like, why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. And if your response is, well, because this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what God has told me to do, this is what has instructed in His Word, then you might be on the right track there. But if you're blending in, you might not be living for Jesus the way you think you're living for Jesus. Which then brings us back to the point. And that is that sometimes we have to take unexpected steps, even when it doesn't make sense. Sometimes we have to take unexpected steps, even when it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make any sense to use a horn to try to bring down a building. It doesn't make any sense to give more away than you take in. It doesn't make sense to sacrifice, I don't know, time from work to spend time with your family. It doesn't make sense to give up some things so that you can make sure that you're gathered together to worship God. Whatever. This isn't judgment time. This is just, these things don't make sense. And sometimes we have to take those steps. And when we do, as we've looked at all month long, God shows up. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much. Thank you for just the story today of Joshua and even kind of this weird idea of looking at the what ifs. Like, what if they hadn't? What if Joshua had given in to some of the ideas and the wisdom and the knowledge and the critics that were out there? And yet he chose to obey. Chose to lead the Israelites in this act of obedience. And in that moment, the walls fell down. in that act of obedience. You showed up in a powerful and incredible way. And God, thank you that that wasn't just Joshua on his own, but that Joshua was connected to you, that he had an encounter with you. And that was his foundation. That was his anchor. That was his bedrock, his root for doing all of these things. And at that point, none of the critics mattered, because the only thing that matters, God, is you. And so I pray for us. I pray that, first of all, we would grow in our connection with you. And as we look at your word and the instructions you've given us and the things that you have told us to do, the things you have called us to do, knowing that they're from you, the God of the universe that created us, that knows everything about us, that provides every breath of our lungs, that died, that sent his son to die for us, that you are the one calling us to do these things. And so we need to allow all the other voices to become quiet and just listen and obey you. I pray that you would help us to do that, even in this time where we have some extra reflection, being kind of trapped at home, some extra time to reflect on the things that really matter and the things that you have told us to do. Help us to step out in bold faith and watch you show up. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.